A. We can A. R. We can archive it on our website.
But will it be played over the television in the Berkeley TV program?
Public access.
Because this is the essence of my knowledge and thinking and of the new movement in this country. That's the essence of it in these pages, and that is why I thought that would be my best contribution, is to bring what Adam Trombley has described on the New Energy picture. So I was hoping that would be available to the people in Berkeley through the...
And you can talk, and he was saying you can interrupt any time and talk when there's something you want to talk
about.
I'm
peaceful. I only want to destroy five people, and that's the ones behind Bush. They need to go away.
All? Why? Why do they need to go away?
They're destroying everybody's lives. But now, my position is now, I'm in favor of all religions, all political parties, all species, human and other, because if the climate change goes too far, we're all out together. So I'm open to all of these, even though I've been strongly in the Democratic Party and helped move a lot of that. But I've also related to other political groups also, but and different religious groups. See, so I'm totally open where I am now on climate stabilization. And now new energy is, see, climate means soil improvements, forests, and new energy technology. So here's Trombley and these people with the very finest approach to what is the new energy, with space energy. And it's been there ever since Tesla started the alternating current in the industry of this country. And then he was killed later because he was going on to space energy himself, and he was poisoned later in life and killed. But Tesla was the center of, Trombley and the others are carrying this forward.
Who poisoned him and killed
him? Well, under the somewhere combination of the federal government and the oil industry. The top people in the oil industry back in the late 20s.
Who was...
Tesla?
Yeah, tell us about him.
Tesla. Okay?
Yes.
All right. Nikolai Tesla was born in Europe, maybe Yugoslavia. When he was 8 years old, his father showed him pictures of great waterfalls around the world, and he looked at Niagara Falls, and he says, when I grow up, I want to go to the United States and harness the energy of that Niagara Falls. And he came here later in life. He was a genius. He developed electricity in the alternating current. They never had it. He set the basis for industry in this country. Then he went on to the further sense of life and of energy to deal with the energy in space. And he would have replaced all these millionaires in the electric industry, and they had him eliminated at that time. But there's been a Tesla society ever since. And they had meetings like in 1988 where Trombley was there and the leading person in India was there, Terawi, and De Palma of this country. Those are three of the foremost people in the new space energy to replace nuclear and oil.
What?
See, so that's where I'm involved now.
Space energy? What is space energy?
That means that in the whole space around us, there is a tremendous untapped energy that they can use and bring to use. Now, Trombley had met with others, he'd studied this, he'd studied Tesla's life, and he developed a demonstration where you put in 40 watts input and you got out 50 kilowatts, so that's like 50,000 to 40. Tremendous energy output from the space around, and he was going to demonstrate that to 50 members of Congress. And this is jumping the gun. He was going to demonstrate that, but the first Bush stopped that and got those congressmen to stay back. And shortly after that, The police allowed a group to come in and destroy their laboratory completely. $20 million lab, destroy the model, and tell him, we are making that secret, therefore you cannot speak about it anymore. You must totally stop any work on this technology. And that's part of Trombley's life. And I've been in touch with him. He lives in Maui now, but he can't relate anymore. But what we have here is what he described in 1988. So that is the basis of where we're all going now.
Where does S, space, energy, C, O, come from?
All around us. They refer to a tremendous amount in every gram of matter that we see and can experience. But behind that is a tremendous energy that keeps it all going. And that is what they are able to tap into. And they started, there were formulas doing this back in 1900. And they were, and Tesla picked up on that work. And then the Soviet Union picked up on this 50 years ago. And they developed technology in this before any other country, because they looked into all forms of science and went ahead on this. And finally, the U.S. is doing something in the last 10 or 15 years.
Is it what I see, call C-H-Chero? Frank calls Chero, it's like the life force that's in everything.
My response, it could be. I am not a top physicist, but I'm acquainted with these people who have moved out there. And we now have, and we're forming a new organization called the New Energy Movement as a nonprofit corporation with a very strong board of directors to support these individual people with technologies to help them go forward and get into larger production in spite of the resistance. In fact, our president, next week, will be meeting with several members of the United Nations to move this out with other countries. At the same time, we're trying to move things in the U.S.
Why is there R.E. resistance?
The oil industry and the nuclear industry are tremendous size, and they do not want to have any change in their investment, their operation, their controls. But it means to save our environment and our atmosphere and our agriculture. We'll put it this way. Look at what we're facing. I was going to bring that in an appropriate time. And it's like this, in a nutshell. It's like, what's the baseball game? You got how many innings in a baseball game? Well, here, you cut all the forests, you get desert. That changes the rain and the hydrological cycle. The rains are stopping in that area. So you have drought, and loss of agriculture, loss of food. And then what happens when that all that change in the rain cycles, then you're also developing so much carbon dioxide and using up oxygen in the world, pushing it in this other form, and all of this is going way high up and changing the ozone, like up 70,000 feet. Changing the ozone, and Trombley tells about the Antarctica down there a number of years ago, where there was a tremendous hole, of course, in the ozone above the Antarctic, and they had a special science group go down there, and they had special suits on and clothing, but they were badly burned, and a number of them had very bad injury to their eyesights in that, and Trombley knew those people. And this is what's, and then go on to the next step, next inning. What happens when there is less and less oxygen, because it's been burnt up with all the fossil fuel and the carbon, CO2, what happens, and then when these millions of vehicles are burning this stuff every day, all year, then there's less and less oxygen in the world, and you go down another 5 or 6% in the oxygen, and you're going to start destroying the phytoplankton in the ocean, and they create half of the oxygen for the world. So you go this cycle all the way through, and the oxygen coming down to where you lose the most of the phytoplankton, and we're on our way out, all species. This never happened before, because never in the billions of years of this Earth did they ever destroy the ozone layer. That's
even when the VOL volcanoes, CHAN, change the CLI, even when the volcanoes change the climate, READI, radically, it did not do that. Even when the volcanoes changed the climate radically, it didn't do the process that you're describing where we're headed.
Well, I have a response, and that is back in 1979, 1980, I started getting letters about the climate change. And for 10 years I'd been working in solar things, solar and solar electric and solar electric power plants with Dr. Otto Smith here at Berkeley, the best design in the world for solar electric to replace nuclear. And I worked hard on that in the 70s, and I was part of a business organization as a budget director in a corporation. I was part of a national business group, and we got Otto Smith to speak to our group in San Francisco twice. And out of that, we became an organization that I brought together of people to build a solar electric power plant in California. And Wismer and Becker, an engineering firm in Sacramento, was going to build it. And we went ahead with these plans. And our lieutenant governor then, Dimely, sent strong letters to every member of our Congress and to our senator. And Senator Cranston pushed on this, but got nowhere because the nuclear people controlled the president's office. Or they were powerful in this country. So that went nowhere, even though the Department of Water Resources wanted to build this solar plant in Southern California to pump water north in the state, just part of their regular work. It never got going. It was totally stopped. Well, now, that was what was developing there in the 70s. So I started getting letters. See, I was on the International Solar Energy Organizations and met in other countries along these lines with Otto Smith's design. Then I started getting correspondence about 79 or 80 about the climate change. And I turned to a psychotherapist with a touch of genius. I held these letters from Don Weaver and John Hammaker about the climate change. And I said, should I get involved in this stuff? She said, she thought about 3 seconds, and she said, follow your vision. And we did. And we got the climate treaty out of the United Nations 10 years later. Now here's what happened. It's not my idea. I just happened to be there when these things got going, see? And there were two people here in Berkeley, Vicky Tamarazzi and Arnold Kochman, took me aside there in 1980 and said, here, we have a nice computer. And they sat down, and and in 1983, actually, we issued our first press release from the Earth Regeneration Society, organized a nonprofit to help stabilize climate. So with their help, we're sitting together, we put out the first press release in this movement. Now Vicky, I mentioned her because we had known each other in 1946 when I was here on the GI Bill as a World War II vet, and she was on the campus. And we'd met even back in 46. So here we are in 1980, 83, and there we are working together. So I mentioned that, you know. These are the people that help start things. Tonight you're helping start some here in Berkeley. Because I've never been on a TV thing in Berkeley before.
I have.
By the way, that was my wife that said, follow your vision. Oh, Thelma Bryant. She says, oh, I don't even remember. But she said it at the right moment, I'm telling you.
You, M, A, R, married, A, G, O, good, P, person.
Yes, yes. She's a psychotherapist and a teacher and a lifelong teacher of K through 12 and junior college, and she's published with the Jung Institute and poetry and articles from early societies like in the Euphrates. The Myth of Inanna is a beautiful first story ever recorded on pottery, and it comes from about 6,000 years ago, but they have it translated. And she wrote a beautiful analysis of this for the Jung Institute Journal one time. So anyway, and she used to teach kids that needed extra help. She's good at that. Well, anyway. So I'm just here because of all the life around me, that's all.
That is how L. I, life, works. That is how life works. I have A, G, U. I have a guy who W, O, R, K, works on, in, the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, on, G, R, E, the greenhouse effect. He is very depressed. He says we are 1, 10 years, B, E, beyond what the computer model said. We're going faster.
I have a response. It goes like this. In 1980, about, a very fine older woman on KPFA named Catherine Webb, she brought me in for an interview from 12 to 1 o'clock on climate change, what's happening. Out of that, 26 people called and we got together as a planning group. What is physically going on in the world about climate change? So here was a very basic group in different fields, very simpatico, and not subject to all the pressures and the false information out of a few large corporations. This was a fine group. And the whole question of volcanic changes would be very small in the bigger picture. But what they came up with was soil, forest, and energy. And soil meant that in the last glacial period, and there's been maybe 24 or more of these periods according to geologists, and they last from 70 to say 110,000 years. The last one About 18,000 years, the ice was melting back. Then you have about 10,000 years of good, the kind of climate we know, and that's the interglacial period between each one. Now, why do they cycle? What's happening? Well, here's what this group came up with, that when the glaciers are moving, they grind a tremendous amount of rock, and that becomes very fine material for plants to grow. And then that washes down in the rivers and streams, like from Wisconsin or New York, clear down to the Gulf of Mexico, tremendous deposits of rich mineral material. But a lot of that's 6-7 feet down now, you can't get at it very well. But this is the reason the forests come back to life. And the greenery on the Earth's surface comes back from all the glacial melt that's going on where there are big glaciers. And then that takes a lot of the carbon dioxide level back out of the air to come back to the interglacial period with beautiful forests and take about 1900. There's good evidence that the CO2, like a baseball score, was 280 parts per million. Where is it now? 370, 72 up there. The goal, you must bring that back down to that 280 roughly by rebuilding the forests, new technologies that don't put out carbon dioxide, and put good minerals back in the soil for forests and for plants, for agriculture, people's food. That's why we say soil, forest, energy for stabilizing climate. Now let me talk about food for just a short moment. There's a farmer up here, north of the river up there, Bob Kennard, for 25 or more years. No pesticides, no chemical fertilizers, good rock dust minerals and organic material. And he has the finest vegetables and fruit, about 50 acres. He's a friend of mine, and he's in the Earth Regeneration Society. He provides most of the good food for the Chepanese restaurant in Berkeley. That's why they are so good on their food. That's why they got such a big reputation. Now, Bob Kennard and I are very familiar, and I've been up there and with him on many things. He was even in the Soviet Union one time to advise them on a similar program, and some of them wanted to, but somehow it didn't go very far. Now, there's a junior high up here. Was Garfield. Now it's the Martin Luther King Junior High on Rose. They have a great big community garden there for the students and the teachers. Bob Kennard and I laid that out together one day. Because he said, Alice Waters would like to see something down there. You know, what do you recommend? So she asked him. So he went back and told her. And they carried through, but good. See? There it is. Now, that's one of the things that came out of our work about rock dust and remineralizing. And we have a lot of people that, when Bob Kennard does not have pests up there, occasionally there's a little, so he takes a little extra rock dust and throws it over those crops, bring their strength back. You see, they draw what they need from those minerals. Now, there's a magazine back east with a woman that put that out on remineralizing soil, because she's part of our movement and efforts since 1980. And then there's a movie out on it from around the world, and she helped guide that. And, this is the point of remineralizing soil. And, now, Austria has an Academy of Science, and they had one man and a woman there really go to work on this and brought a lot of their dying forests back to life, good rock dust minerals and organic stuff. And he was a member of our board of advisors on our Earth Regeneration Society. And I met with the two of them over in Budapest at an international meeting later. And behind the Earth Regeneration Society was formed ERS for climate stabilizing that climate. So we had meetings all around the world, but partly as another group, International Society of System Sciences, like Fred Wood was the leader in there on science. He's the guy who was down at IBM for 27 years. Designing top computers for them. But he had a social conscience very strong, and he was the lead guy in this international, this ISSS group. And every year they have an international meeting. So we used to put in strong papers about the climate, soil, forest, energy work. And finally, in June of, the whole thing started to open up in June of 1988. You want to hear that little story, how that triggered the thing?
Yes.
You see, none of us planned this stuff. It just sort of came along.
You are P R O providing, proving there is hope. You are proving that there is hope.
As long as I'm breathing, I'll do something. But we got on
Me,
the front lines. I'll tell
me
you how.
Too.
Oh, yeah. And I'm glad to be here with you because I have a real good feeling. Now, here's what triggered that thing with the United Nations. There's a woman here in Berkeley that has a Micklejohn Civil Liberties Institute and Ginger. She's an international lawyer, member of the International Democratic Lawyers. She's a very powerful figure on constitutional law, teaches at SF State and so on. And she's head of this institute. Well, I've known her for 20-some years. And one day she walked up and said, Alden, here's a flyer. There's a meeting. You got to go to it. Now, here's what happened. That was a meeting at the World Trade Center in June of 88 of the World Federation of Scientific Workers. Well, most of them are in Europe. But they decided to meet in New York that one year. So, what did I do? I got in touch with seven or eight top people around climate stuff, and we were going to have a special session back at that meeting. Okay, that's fine by them. They're organizers, and I got in touch with people in Brazil and Australia, and Austria there, and our people here, and Professor Ken Watt, who was a top environmental scientist up at Davis, and he was one of our organizers at the start. So, anyway, we had that subsection there. Now, I went back to this meeting, see, in June. When I got there, we found out that the first night, the man from the Soviet Union was supposed to open the conference, and his plane was late. So what did they do? They had me give my paper to open the conference. Mm-hmm. I said, all right. I wanted to get my paper out in front. They all stayed awake. Then I read the whole thing. And I got on the last page, and you know what happened? I hear a voice down here saying, hey, you're taking too long. That was Ann Ginger. So we got through it fine. But now the point is that out of that conference, we had a 19-point summary go to the head of the United Nations for the summer session. That was the elected head of that as a peace session. And the head of that happened to be the ambassador from East Germany. Well, he was sympathetic to a peace movement. So we brought our 19 points to him, including climate stabilization, soil, forest, and energy things within this broad scene of what is a peace movement. You got to take care of the people and stop killing everybody. Mm. Problems. Well, in the next couple of days, I went around to the United Nations Environment Program there, you know, here in New York, the UNEP thing, and they're across the street from the main building of the UN. And I knew Noel Brown, who was the head of it for North America, because he and I had met out here at Union Square when he spoke many months before. Can I stop there for a moment? We won't lose it. How did I know Noel Brown? It wasn't my idea, but they had this big United Nations Day meeting, and he was the main speaker at Union Square. But they also had me come on to open the program and sing the music from the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. And that music was by Jim Wood here in Berkeley. And that's been done around lots of the world. Declaration of Human Rights. Very fine music. So I sang the ending of that, the will of the people shall be the basis of government, and that really blasted Union Square. See, good. people say, hey, that's something unusual. What's all that about? So anyhow, Noel Brown was the main speaker, and we got to be real friends after that, see? He's an African-American guy, but he's from, I think, Haiti or one of the British areas down there. Anyhow, he was a fine job as head of the UNEP back there in New York. So that's my home away from home. So after that meeting with the scientific workers stuff, I went over down there and I addressed a package to every member of the UN about the climate stabilization, like our 26 people had brought forward, soil, forest, energy, and this paper of ours. So I went to every member of the UN. And later I called up Iceland, because I know when it's a climate ice age, they all have to go south, because it's all ice. They can't stay there. They go down, they have a ball down in the Mediterranean or something, and then they go back later, thousands of years later or something. That's the story I heard. So anyhow, Iceland says, no, we're not doing anything like this, but get in touch with the ambassador from Malta, Alexander Borg Olivier. Well, now here's his story. He's a real on-the-ball guy, and he had gotten the material from us, and he put a resolution in the UN General Assembly saying, stabilizing climate is a human right and a human goal, and that statement was passed unanimously on the 1st of December. Well, then he agreed, because a third guy sat with me in the UN building, and he said, you know, we ought to have a meeting, an all-day session here in the UN, he said. And that was Harry Lerner, psychiatrist, and he was head of a group, CCCUN, Communication Coordinating Committee for the UN. You know, they help out in a lot of stuff. So he set up the Dag Hammarskjöld Auditorium for our all-day conference. And we held that December 9, 1988. That was the day that was done, a full-day conference on this. And Alexander Borgo Olivier sponsored, we sponsored, and Harry Lerner's group. But I chose the main speakers and anchored the program at the end with a paper and so on. This is on video. So out of that meeting, old brother Alexander Borg Olivier wrote up the two resolutions to the General Assembly, the Rio Summit, and then we got the climate treaty, and they went through. Wow. That came out of our December 9 meeting. Wow. So that's where it all came together. We'd worked for 10 years, you know, Fred Wood and all the folks. And I got a 10-page summary of all of this, all the international meetings. And that's why old Ron Dellums, you know, you must know about old Ron Dellums. Well.
Yes.
You know, of all the curious things of history again, in when Johnson was president, he was pushing this OEO, Office Economic Opportunity, for big cities to all have programs. San Francisco had an Economic Opportunity Council, and they had at one time 60 programs and about $14 million a year and about 1,200 people in all these programs running them for half of San Francisco to bring up all kinds of Head Start and education and child care and job training. The whole thing. Well, I happened to ended up being the chief budget analyst for that whole operation. And my boss was John Barry, African-American accountant, a very fine finance guy from Oakland who come over to San Francisco. So he was my boss. He said, Alden, you run the budget operation, because I'd done that in corporations before. Mm-hmm. Corporate budget officer. I'm on my feet wet, you know, a number of things. So anyway, he says, Alden, you make those figures add across and down, and you've done your job. So get on with running that budget program, see? Well, that meant that 60 organizations had to turn in a monthly summary of what they're doing in order to get their money from the bank to meet their payrolls. And 5 or 6 years, we never missed a monthly payroll when I was on that job. That was the hardest job I ever had. But the banks knew that if I sent them a letter and said, that money is on the way from the feds, they'd meet their payrolls. And that's what old John Barry said. Hey, you do what old Bryant, his word's good as gold. So you do what he says. That's what old John Barry used to tell him. So anyway, that was our way to go at it. But anyhow, you see, that's the background where Dellums and I were together, because he was in charge of job training under the Department of Labor at first. And I was in charge of new programs. And we got to know each other. And when he ran for city council, I went over his first written talk with him. And we were together ever since. And then on the climate stuff, when he was in Congress, we wrote up a bill for the U.S. called Climate Stabilization and Earth Regeneration Act of 1992. And Dellums put that in Congress, and it went into about eight committees, and it did the usual thing. They just sat. None of them went anywhere with the oil and nuclear people around.
Why?
They didn't want any competition. They didn't want to destroy all the oil profits.
But
by going ahead with forests and new energy and soil work and so on.
In 5050. But in 50 years, there will be O, oil, F, R, U, N, F, R, U, N.
No, they're all gone, all finished.
Yeah, yeah. And C, O, A, L, and coal. All gone. U. You would think they would be S H O shopping around for A N new for something to take its place.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
You would think that.
Now, let's go back to the most determining and significant web here, and that's why Trombley has so clearly. When you look at the rate of change from the forests being gone, so much of Africa, South America, this country, but especially in Africa, where maybe almost 80% coverage in Ethiopia, mm-hmm. now about 4%, something like this. With the forest gone and the rain cycles totally mm-hmm. disturbed, and there's almost no moisture in the clouds because there's no, because it gets evaporated very fast the moment mm-hmm. it comes down to the heat. And so with this stuff moving, and the moving of the CO2 situation, and the impact on the ozone up here, that's going to have the impact across on the phytoplankton. And we have very few years left to go, maybe 10 or 20, 20 at the mm-hmm. most, of the phytoplankton themselves are going to be destroyed in this picture. Therefore, we have to move intensely from now, because it's being brought forward. And this is what he was saying in 1988. Mm. Now, that happened to be the year we met there to get this climate treaty through the UN, it just so happens. But that's when the government came down on him and threatened his life and told him, here's this secrecy thing, you can't talk anymore, and we've hereby destroyed your lab and your model and all this. That so happened at the same time. But we also see this question of timing. Therefore, back in when Dellums was putting our bill in Congress, we came up with a proposal for 20 million jobs in this country around the soil work, the rebuilding of forests, new technology, and all the supplementary support in our economy. And we needed 20 million jobs too. But we put that forward with Department of Labor categories and listed the type of work here. And now that was an official request to Congress and people in large in the country. Let's move with that.
But
no action.
They don't want J jobs. They want P
profits.
Profits.
We know. Now, we had to put that forward because we swung the whole California Democratic Party and its executive and the rest, because I was helped found their environment caucus. I was in there, the founding group, and I was its treasurer for 6 years just to push the climate effort. We even sent stuff to Republican meetings, say, get with it. Well, anyhow, in the Democratic Party, we got the head group here in California to pass a strong resolution to stabilize climate, do the soil, forest, and energy work. And they took it back to the national, and they ignored it, the National Democrats. You know, they're part of big business, and they just ignored it. Well, that's where we made our efforts, see? We tried these things. We didn't give up. Well, it's still coming home to roost. But we knew the time was short. And that's why we put, and this 20 million job thing, the background was, there's laws in this country twice on full employment. Hawkins started back in around 48, and then again, I think 72, some more. What does it say? The president, in the State of the Union message, it's his responsibility to list federal employment for all the people that the private industry does not employ, like the WPA, like FDR. That's the law in this country. They just ignored it ever since. Except Johnson tried a bit. But so we refer to that law and that 20 million jobs. We're just carrying out what it says.
Do we have time to reverse things to or have we R E A reached the point of no return?
Back in the 1980s, 1990s, going on what we knew, we thought we're heading for a total collapse, and maybe it's too far gone, but we'll keep trying. But since then, the whole world has really shifted to the extent there is such a push for the new energy now, the space energy, or zero-point energy, or is called an AC resonant generator that went from 400 watts up to 500 kilowatts. That's what Adam Trombley had working with his co-partner David Farnsworth. Well, that's one of the kinds of things. There's another whole development here in cold nuclear fusion that was like a tremendous worldwide discovery and putting it that to work, and then it was totally suppressed. But then here, 12 or so years later, the Wall Street Journal had a big story on this where 150 science people came together at MIT all working on the cold fusion process and showing that it works. The more energy comes out than they're putting in and how they're doing it. So that's one aspect of new energy. But Trombley's was one of the, what he was doing with a guy named De Palma and the guy named Tirawi from India, the three of them, just think of them at a meeting in 1988, the same year that we hit our thing. They're meeting with the Tesla Society, which kept meeting every year to move on the new stuff. So these three top guys met at that thing. And there's a woman from Canada who met with them and is a journalist and has written a wonderful book on all of this, but she was not one of the top physicists as they were. Now, Tirawi, now there's a fellow, India. He helped develop their whole nuclear industry. But then he said, wait a minute now, and he got into this whole new energy thing. It's to replace nuclear and totally in as far as power, and the same with the oil industry and so on. So he's totally in this new kind of energy from space, the free energy movement, the same as Trombley and a guy named De Palma. The three of them were together, see, in this country.
S-H-S. So, if we S-T start N now to or in the N near next few
years
can we reverse the direction things are heading in?
We have two or three very powerful essays of one page or two pages, like from Brian O'Leary, describing and speaking to this very thing, that here's the what we can do, here's how we need hundreds of millions of dollars going into the taking these models, developing them, going into large production, and getting state or federal money in this thing, not just one big private corporation. We've got to have this kind of development and move them out to large-scale production, and we have, this is essential for our continued existence, and that's why we organize the NEM itself, the New Energy Movement. We organize that. People have been calling me. I called Brian O'Leary. We'd never met. We talked on the phone. We're simpatico from the start. So we met and are organizing this movement, and we have an eight, if nine, member board of directors. We're getting this set up as a nonprofit.
We'll be having him on the show also, Brian O'Leary.
Yeah, he was just recently on a, Jim Burris talked with you already about him.
Yes.
Because Jim is somewhat aware of our whole effort.
Yes.
And Brian was just on one of these coast-to-coast talk shows where there's about 10 million people on it at night. And he got 250 emails and 500 requests for his book, the fifth new book here on this climate stuff, Changing Society and the New Energy and all. It's called Reinheriting the Earth. So that's the sort of thing that Brian's good at, whereas I'm on the organizing end. See, I don't know much anything, on the physics. I'm just a mechanical engineer and economist. You know, I'm just a half-baked guy, But I help get things together, So we're a team. And then there's nine of us now, I called three of these guys, and they told me about this meeting of Trombley and Tarawi of India and the third guy here in the U.S. They told me, fill me in on this. They knew some of them. Some of these guys knew them. They're on our board now, younger people. Here I am hitting 81 this year in a couple of weeks. So we got two generations down the way, come on, you guys, get organized.
What is your D? Your S? Secret? What is your secret?
Of staying alive so far?
Yeah, and being vital.
Hey, can I start backwards to describe that, answer that question? Did you ever hear of a guy named Tommy Smith and John Carlos? 1968, they were winners in the Olympics in Mexico. And when they went on the stand and the American anthem was played, they were African Americans and they were part of the movement to end discrimination. Mm-hmm. They had black gloves. They bowed their heads. They held their arms up while the anthem was being played. Oh, did they get hit on by all the establishment afterwards. But 2 days ago, it was in the Chronicle that a monument is being built at San Jose State in honor of those two and what they stood for.
Wow.
And I wrote a hell of a letter to the, an email to the guy that wrote that article in the Chronicle. And I want to get back in touch because I'd seen Tommy Smith and John Carlos running track. I was in track and field in my life. In fact, I was the number two guy in this country in my event once and number eight internationally. Now, what was that event? In Masters, you compete in a five-year age group. And when I was sort of a young guy, 65, I was in the 65 to 9 group. So I went down to Melbourne for the World Meet. And my friends had talked me into doing the five event, the pentathlon. You see, when you're not good at any one, but you put the five together, it worked out okay, see? So I was number two for the U.S. in that thing, out of 26 men, and number eight internationally. But I've mentioned quietly to my friends, don't tangle with the Australians and New Zealanders. They're too tough. But anyway, that's so that I had maybe four marathons and maybe 50 cross-country races in my life. And then I went into track and field because I couldn't run distance. My arteries clogged up a bit. So I went down there. I was fair shape. So that's what I did in Melbourne. That's 5,000 men and women in their five-year age groups. Even a blind woman ran the 400 meters with her friend. And they had their little cloth on their wrists. And then an old guy in his 90s, some guy from China, I think, he did his 100 meters. Well, that's life. And a friend of mine was down there sitting in the bleachers when I did the 1,500 meters.
But
anyway, so that's part of staying. Now, I'm back on the front lines right now because Brian O'Leary will soon be meeting with two head groups in the United Nations to bring our movements together. Where can we and they do the same things together on energy, free new energy? United Nations Environment Program and it's under economic development, and it's under that is the stabilization of.
But how? But why? Don't you get be you burnt out? Or L-O-S, lose H, or lose hope?
The hope has to do with the things that are moving right around. And it took me 20 minutes on the phone to set up O'Leary's meetings back there because I had all these contacts with the UN before. And then I followed up with writing some long emails to him and to them, the two key people back there. So these things happen. That's because of what I've been doing in the past. So here I am down here trying to make a living, which I can't have. I've been totally out, and we're almost on the streets right now. But I'm trying to get a job. But I'm trying to get a job. I actually applied to old Gray Davis for one of his final appointments before he's out of office. They made a big rush to say, hey, we want to put a bunch of guys in. So I sent him 30 pages, you know, and said, hey, the deities put me here. Give me a job. Something like that, see. Climate stabilization and a whole lot of things. But anyway, so
I get.
I'm back in it again.
I get people in. No, 20 year olds. S. A. Saying they are B. Burnt out.
It can happen. I was burnt out in the poverty program in San Francisco, the Economic Opportunity Council. I was there for 7 years, and I was really burnt out handling the budgets for these 60 programs day by day and all their operations. And their word was, you want to get something done at the head office, go see me, because I was in charge of their budgets. Well, anyway, I got burnt out doing that stuff.
How? Yeah.
A lot of people burn out in 3, 4, 5 years, and I made it 7.
How?
Because I was running.
How did you get you out of being burnt out?
Well, let me put it this way. I never did, and here's what happened. I was down there in Melbourne in pretty good shape. That was 87. 2 years later, I did the same five events here at Cal at the UC track here, the annual meet, and I did 30 points better. But after that, I went 10 years just working on the environment projects, day and night, 7 days a week, and I burnt myself out there and went for a quadruple heart bypass, and I was about an hour or two from being dead. Mm-hmm. The doctors took x-rays and said it looked like spider webs. How'd any blood get through there? I blew it all, see? So by their best guy happened to be there. An hour later, I was on the operating table and made it through. That was 2 years ago. And so I still go down on this annual track meet and throw the discus and the javelin. I ran the 100 a year after the operation. Oh, that looked funny. My daughter was there to cheer, see? What'd I do? The gun went off, and a whole bunch of guys ran down the track. And here I am, way the heck back over here, you know? About 20 yards behind them. I couldn't run worth anything. I was waving my arms like I knew what I was doing, but my daughter said, oh, God, Alden, you just couldn't move. Your feet were stuck to the ground. Well, now, last year I went out and did my just discus and javelin for the heck of it and be back with my old buddies. See, I was the founding president of that track club, Northern Cal Seniors Track Club, 1968. I'm still a member. But I was their founding president, see. They like me to head something.
But your spirit doesn't get burnt out.
Well, it keeps coming back because the people I relate to sitting here tonight is a real shot in the arm, I'm telling you.
Yay.
I even trim my mustache a little because this guy's got a camera up there. And I got a corny sense of humor and I like singing. See, first, I like singing in life. Secondly, running. Thirdly, social change.
Ken?
And I'm not much good at home unless, well, we're 50-50 when my kids were little.
Can you sing? A. S. Song. Now.
Why don't I do the same piece of music that I sang in the United Nations building in December of 88, noon hour, they put on Jim Wood's music with the whole United Nations chorus and 10 professional singers to beef it up, and the six soloists came from the Bay Area. And Helen Dilworth, African-American woman from here, is one of the finest sopranos in the Bay Area. She did our real solo work in this, and she was there, of course. And I sang the Russian solo. They had Chinese, Russian, French, Spanish, and English, I think.
Are we ready, Mike?
So I'll give you... Well, in the middle, they have these songs by the five veto members in the Security Council. See, so they, each one of those languages, they have a solo in the middle of this. Is this working now?
Yeah, we're going.
So I'm talking to the folks?
Yes, you are.
Starts off all human beings. All human beings are born free and equal. They are endowed with a reason and a conscience and should act toward one another in the spirit of a brotherhood. Let me come on in this in the Russian. Сиелюди рождаются свободными и равными, наделенными разумом и совестью, и поступать должны в отношении друг, friendship, друг, друг, в духе, братство.
Wow.
Well, that's what I used to go and do for about 20, 25 years, and old Jim Wood got this music going. I've sung this in Russia and Australia and all around this country and England and France.
Wow.
On different meetings. And then the last part goes, Mondel Chirac. Had a big meeting
City
in North
Council.
Berkeley Senior Center during the last election period. And they had about 300 people in there that night. And they had about 10 music groups come on and do something. So Jim Wood and I were asked to come on last. I won't do them, but I'll tell you what happened. He was on a walker, and it was his last public appearance before he died from multiple illnesses.
Wow.
And they had me sing it, and Jim was there playing his music. The first thing I sang was Paul Robeson's love song, Where You Go, My Heart Will Follow After, and Jim just sat with me. I sang that. Just straight. That's how I do, so I can pick my own key and intuition, everything freely. Mm. I love a cappella. Then secondly, remember Sacco and Vanzetti in the history of this country? Vanzetti's last words were put to music by Jim Wood. Simple, powerful piece of music. If it had not been for these things, I would have, you know, that ends up with his ending. And the powerful ending. So I sang it in the sense of which it meant, you know, and came to the powerful ending where we give our lives. And he hit his chords, you know, and hit the chords well in his with his guitar. And damn, we didn't have a standing ovation there that night.
Wowee.
And then the third song was the from the UN with Jim playing the music through it. The will of the people shall be the basis of government. Ends up in the cause of peace. And he sang the last part with me in the way he used to when we would sing together. And that was the end of the program. And the first person to greet us as we came down off the stage was a woman and developed this whole movement around the children of Palestinian children. Yeah.
We? Jay?
We have a tape of that evening, too, by the way. Tape recording.
Could we get a copy of it?
Sure, you could.
Wow, we. We just are read at Berkeley Liberation, Berkeley Liberation Radio, the micro
104.1?
Yes. Had a benefit on Friday night, and Frank was asked to read some of his poems, and we did that. M-O, most, L, mostly, H, I, hip, H, mostly hip-hop. Most of the performers that night were hip-hop, yes, rap, and the L, last, H, couple hours, was all straight rap and hip-hop, and at one point, one of the guys came down into the audience and said, come on, everybody, get up. And so we all, the four of us, got up and we were right in the front. And we were really rocking out and dancing. You know, pretty much killed us for 2 hours. And, you know, a lot of the guys were coming down and hand-jiving Frank and stuff and really enjoying singing to us and things. But
see,
it felt really powerful.
That's what's coming up in thousands of places in this country.
It just felt so powerful because it felt like Frank's poems were all about, you know, what needs to happen, what needs to not be there, and what need and like hope, you know. And everybody got really quiet, and you felt like they were listening to every word. And then it was like by the time we're all dancing together, this is like midnight, 12:30, didn't end till 1 in the morning. It felt like we had all these people, all different colors, all different ages, all different kinds of people, and we were all kind of one thing. We were all like of one mind, what was it about? And it felt like, you know, it was so strong. F, U, S, fuse, your poem Fuse. Was the last poem we read. And you want me to paraphrase it? It's about how change, it starts we're at a gate together, and it's about the fusing of all of us together to go into this new place and how that works. So it was very positive.
Maybe we share a lot because in the last 1, 2, or even 3 years, it seems people are finding each other that never talked before.
Yes.
They're
yes.
coming together yes. in all kinds of ways. Yes. And then there are a lot of groups that are really expanding and so on. But just meeting, like Jim Burr. Well, we bumped into each other over there at the coffee shop. And then I sang a bunch of songs for him when they had a first musical thing there. including a French underground song during the Second World War. As they poured across the border, I was cautioned to surrender. This I would not do. I took my gun and vanished. That's quite a poem. That's quite a song.
Oh. C-O-H. Cone. Cone. K-O-H-N. L. Leonard Cohen. Leonard Cohen does that song. Yeah.
If you're talking, yeah. I didn't know.
Yeah.
See, I knew
this is an old poem from.
Well, it's from the
Second World War.
My wife's cousins were in the underground in France during that, and they brought this back with them. Wow. Well, then it was also in the pre-Pete Seeger's songs, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Small world, huh? Oh, by the way, Maud Elsharik, she was among the 70 people from the U.S. that went to Budapest, Hungary in 1983 in the World Anti-Nuclear. It's the biggest meeting since the U.N. was started, about 3,000 people from around the world, put on by the World Peace Council. And that was a tremendous thing. She was there, I was there from the U.S.,
You think the P-H-R-A phrase C-L-I climate W A warming is
global warming
is a C O N con. Do you think the phrase global warming is a con?
Am I glad you asked that? Let me stand up and take the next 2 hours, or in 1 minute, it goes this way. I'll tell you, it's the damnedest thing. The oil company started, and they're destroying the world.
My R E S E research. He did his research, he said.
Good, 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 good. You see, when we got going here with the Earth Regeneration Society, and the one thing was we were all mobilized around soil force and energy and stabilized, get that CO2 level back to 280 and no more emission of carbon dioxide. Well, when we got moving, about a year or so later, the world oil industry, the top guys had a meeting back east, and we were told about this by an ex-Navy science person who knew some of them. They had a meeting and decided they got to stop any reference to the next glacial period and just talk about global warming and then start 100 different channels of confusion about it to make sure the public never did anything to interfere with their profits or their control or their empire. So warming was it. Now along comes Bush number one. And he was asked to come give some kind of a talk on climate to some early form of an international group. Well, Sununu was his chief of staff. And then there was a guy named Andy Card. You know that name? He's the chief of staff for the second Bush right now. Well, Andy Card was a speechwriter back then. And he called a person he knew in New York about, what do you say about climate? What do I have to write here for Bush? And that guy, as soon as he heard that, he got on the phone and called me because we were close associates. He called me and I faxed a whole page of stuff to Andy Card, including, I said, I don't want my president, or the president, to sound, look like the back end of a, I said a train, not a horse, of a train, and he doesn't know what's going on. And the whole program is one of stabilizing climate, climate stabilization, and warming is just a part of it. It warms from the equator up, and it's freezing from the Greenland or the Antarctic coming in, and where the cold and heat meet, they're going to have terrible, more and more terrible storms and hurricanes and floods and everything else. All of these things accentuate going into the next glacial period. Well, I didn't tell him all of that, but I said, but they, he wrote me back a personal note and thank you, stay in touch, and they changed the name of that speech to climate change and not warming. Well, that's just an interesting thing that happened in 1990. Well, so that gives you some of our response to this thing about global warming, and the and Fred Wood was so knowledgeable on the many, many channels of just misinformation. Even guys, these ex-retired professors were given big money to go out and give this speech, you know, something about warming, and got all this confusion going in the public. Well, that's what, so when you ask your question, boy, you hit on what we were having to deal with.
Like there, this S U summer in F R A in France 1 2 12,000 people died of the heat.
I wish I understood that better as to what's going on with their medical system or support group for elderly people. Or they all, so many of them go down the Mediterranean in the summer to take it easy. What happened? But then in New York, a lot of them died, but that was never in the newspapers, but I heard about it. Well, this is part of the intense change that's going on. Let me give one example to go with it. There was this this storm out there on the Atlantic, and they said the winds went up to 165 miles per hour, but it was out over the Atlantic. But it was headed toward Washington, D.C., and they weren't sure how it was going to go. But we knew that if a 165-mile-an-hour wind hit Washington, D.C., you'd be back to marshland. There wouldn't be a single building left standing with that kind of velocity of wind moving on them and on them and on them. It would all go down. This is what the word came through to us, and that's what we since understood. They're just that close as the times get worse. Now, it'd been over 200 miles an hour in some little islands down in the Pacific. All the trees are flat. Go back a ways. Even in England, they had their first big hurricane in about a year or so before 88, because in toward the end of the summer of 88, I was with a friend, I was in London, and my friends knew some of their Tories. You know, but they got a Tory party in England. Well, the Tories wanted to grab a few middle votes. See, they were going to organize a Tory Green initiative and look good and get some middle votes and try and knock out those labor folks, see? Well, it so happened that their first meeting in the House of Commons, about 40, half of them were House of Commons members and half were elected politically elsewhere. And my friend and I happened to be in London. My friends knew their organizer, and I ended up being their opening speaker for their first meeting in the House of Commons on climate change. Well, I said, fine, I'm willing to talk to these fellows. And so we did a lot of laying all of this out and explaining the seriousness of these areas. And then afterwards, at the end, this guy says, well, now how are we going to fund all of that stuff? How are we going to pay for all that, he says. No, but they also said, oh, we remember the great roaring in our ears from that hurricane that hit England and knocked out about 3 million trees in England. Oh, we remember that roaring sound. And so they asked me, what are you going to pay for it? What do you recommend? How do you finance this? And I just looked around the room and I said, from the military. Big silence. Nobody said a thing. They all thinking, what? How do you mess with military money? Well, it so happened about 6 months later, there was no more peeps out of the Tory Green Initiative. They figured this wasn't something for them. They just gave up. And here they had a progressive Democrat of some sort from California giving their opening talk. They didn't know where I was coming from. They just knew I'm working on climate. Well, that's how's that for a story? For England, for what's warming or not.
The M I L military in the U in the U.S. U uses. Fifty percent of
the federal budget,
and the fuel is that the is that it the fuel?
Oh yeah. Well, did you ever hear of a fellow named Howard Jetter? Well, now he put out something called Jetter Plan a year ago on his birthday. November 30 of 2002, the Jetter Plan, one page, 7 points, and he's a veteran from World War II. He and I were on campus in 46 as part of the Graduate Student Association on the GI Bill together. So we've been—he's an African American guy,
and you.
We've been working together ever since.
R. M. A. Making me feel like a B. A. Like a baby. And I was. I was born in 46. You're making him feel like a baby.
That was our coming together that year. Well, I happened to be president of the Graduate Student Association at Cal from 46 to 47 when I came back on the GI Bill. Well, you see, that's what we got to know. The next generations are going to keep things going, see?
Yes. Yes.
Well, so Howard's plan is a hell of a thing. Because those 7 points, a number of people wrote it out with him, but it's the Jetter Plan, it's called. Because as veterans that take care of the veterans and their families and all the destroyed things they've gone through with no help, take care of the vets, and then come back here to carrying out the full employment law in this country, full health service like Canadian system, guaranteed annual wage, which was brought up years ago. That keeps everybody going. And then tax program should be similar, the IRS, the tax program should be similar to 1947 and 8 after the Second World War, in which those top things were taxed 90% on down to run the Second War effort. Nobody complained, they just did it. The real scale there according to their income. So it says put that scale back now, because what this country and the people need is even more than then. So put that system back. So that's part of the Jetter Plan.
And
you know, if you know anything about the
two,
excuse me.
And at and a c e I ceiling on p are profit and income. Frank's always said he'd like to see a ceiling on profit and income. And it can be a high ceiling, but
that
would be
isn't
it.
One of these points in there. But the other things all set the total system in a way. Mm-hmm. And we have about 17 pages of backup for those 7 points. And one of those pages, I can mention now, something that I wrote and sent to Johannesburg last year when they met down there in South Africa on the whole climate thing, or on the whole 10 years since the climate treaty was passed. And you know, there were tens of thousands of people protesting there, the big corporations, and how the people are treated worse and worse in all the third world countries. We're all over. So tremendous protests there. Well, I'd sent down a 2-page paper there. The front was calling for asking the body there to send a request to the General Assembly of the UN to start a 15-year crash program on soil and forest and energy and new energy involving with targets. And we'd issue a book with targets for each country. How much new forest is needed based on their history? How much CO2 has to be eliminated by new technology? And so that book was about 80% ready because I prepared it, because I knew we had to get into this. And I'm waiting for $20,000 to finish it up from some grant place. And some had promised, and then they fell apart, and I never got it. So it's still waiting to get this out. But that's what I put to the meeting down in Johannesburg, to ask the General Assembly of the UN to go on this kind of a 15-year crash program and get going, see? And then it has 2 pages there, and it gives a backup and where I'd come from on this and how we were ready to get this out. It's only a $20,000 project at this point. We knew that this kind of cooperation among all the countries and all the sections of the UN had to take place or we're not going to make it. And I even talked about remineralizing soil and some of the people that are very strong on this. There's one guy that got a prize from the UN as the top guy in food production in the world. And he'd been in South America and South and Africa. And he'd got them into using special mineral stuff and bolster their agriculture where he found they needed it. Instead of just good rock dust, he said, you need some of this, we got to find good rock dust to do this. So he was well into it, and he's an international figure in helping countries develop their food operations. Now, he was at Cal for a little while, now he's back in New York. But see, I mentioned him in my page thing, and then I remember I mentioned Rashmi Mayur of India. Did you ever hear of him? Well, Rashmi Mayur is one of the very special guys out of India. He worked for the General Secretary of the UN, many different projects. He's head of a group in India to do environmental and peace operations. And his board is half government of India and half UN people. And he's the head of that. He's also, we're good friends since 1985. He was going to get my book published down in India and much lower price and get to third world countries because of their support. See, now, but what happened to Rashmi was that before he went to Johannesburg, he worked so hard in New York getting things done and taking my statement down. He was one of 3 people carrying this statement to Johannesburg. He got down to Johannesburg in the middle of an impassioned presentation. He had a stroke and he just went down. There were tens of thousands of people around. They flew in a helicopter to get him out and get him to a hospital. So they saved him. And he was comatose for a long time, and his sister was right there with him every day, and some of our people were on the phone with her. I'd met her in the past, 1985, actually, at a World Future meeting in New York, in Washington. So anyhow, then he was flown back to New York and then to India, and now the latest word is he's sharp, mentally alert. Mm-hmm. He's alert mentally, and he's moving with a walker, and they're trying to help him along and make progress. Well, at least he's with us, and we're going to see if he can keep doing better. And that is such a relief to people all. In fact, he's editor of something called War and Peace. It's an environmental thing that comes out of New York, a little newsletter. And he's the editor of that. And I was talking to their assistant on the phone the other day. Well, there are hundreds and hundreds of groups of all sorts that we hope with the new energy movement to be in touch with them. So we join forces in getting stuff and getting actually produced.
But the Y E A R, the year before the F A fake C A L California
new governor
G A G A no P O power C R crisis, the year before the fake California power crisis. L U lover was R U running S T stories about A P M I N mini G E G E N
generator.
What?
Generator.
A mini generator that A C O C I city or even A F E even a few B blocks could use it was S U supposed to have N B E Ben M A made B by A E S T A established E European company, but it D I disappeared when the subject of the power energy came up. And you wondered why it disappeared, because it was something that would have could have been used in that situation. Is that it? It would have been, it would have been H B Y. It would have bypassed the C E N T central G grid So you're just saying you think it's fishy that this kind of thing disappeared at a point where it would have been useful. Is that yeah? Have you heard of that?
I think my best response is a little more general because I've heard of a number of things, maybe 5 or 10 different approaches that could have started putting new energy, producing energy development things in cities, in homes, replacing the large power plants, everything from the biggest on down to individual units in homes. And I have a list of, say, 9 things that cover like this, and it's from back in New Jersey, somebody that's into a lot and proposing. And I said, we know people that can do such and such. And out here you have people like the real leaders.
Oh, we have some water there for you.
No, I'm okay, thanks. Yeah. Good point. But, but like Trombley's material, then there's another thing, another design that would take water out of the bay in a big tube and then treat it in a certain way and desalinate, say, about 6 million gallons a day in this kind of project. Then it would go through a special technological process here and come out with 45 megawatts of electricity. And the man that developed that was in Nevada. And I was in touch with him for about 5 or 6 years, and we made estimates. Now, I used to work for Bechtel as a cost engineer and building the Pittsburgh power plant out here. See, I was on that job because that was early in life. I was a mechanical engineer here from Berkeley. So I made an estimate with him that if you did this for Berkeley and you had 3 such units and you had 30-year bonds, and you'd have to research bringing the water in from the bay in a pipe such that wouldn't be too much sand in it, you have to do that, we'd come out with about 1/3 the cost for electricity and water for the whole city of Berkeley. Now, that guy happens to be in jail at Fort Worth, Texas now, because the feds got him put away with some false information they brought into a trial, and they accused him of this and that and put him away for 5 years. And we've been trying to get lawyers to get him out. Wow. And we're trying to raise the first $20,000 to have this lawyer get him out down in Fort Worth, Texas. So that's what's been going on. But he was in touch with 3 or 4 designs, including a friend of his 20 years before that developed a car totally running with a little battery, a battery starter, and a small compressor. Then that would translate to a big air compressor, and the car would totally run on that. They had this car running, and he was going to demonstrate it to a president to see it from 20 years ago, from when he told me. Well, what happened was when this guy showed up with his car at the White House to take the president on a tour, some special agents came out and met with him, and the outcome of it was he was never seen again. His family totally disappeared. They all went somewhere else, and that totally stopped the design of that car. But my friend Bob Lance from Nevada was with him there and knew how that was done and was in the process of getting a new model put together when the feds got him put away. So this is the kind of thing going on. And so, yes, I do know of a number of things that were talked about, like for homes, for communities in a city, for the whole state, air for region, big power plants, the range of things. And that's what we're going to try and get moving on now, and that's why the new energy movement has a number of strong people on the board so we can help mobilize this stuff. And so I'm just coming in on something of the organizing end.
A L talk about H A R hard B, talk about hardball. Talk about hardball. That they're playing hardball to make people disappear like that and to put them into jail.
Well, that was 20 years ago, but it was only 2 years ago where they knocked off Bob Lance. Yes. Now, Trombley had his life threatened, and they told him, we've declared your thing secret, you can't talk about it. So he's totally pushed aside, but he's there, and he's with people who are close that I'm close to. In fact, I was on the phone over his place here a month ago in Maui. So this stuff is very much ready to go. But the Kucinich is the only one that's really going to would be helpful. Take Gore. Gore came here once when Dellums.
Please take Gore.
Don't
please
mention him.
Take Gore.
Well, I was going to explain why he's a problem.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if you want another problem about Gore.
Yes. Go ahead. Tell us.
All right. He came out here to help Dellums raise money for re-election. He came to support Dellums. So he was here in the later 90s. Mm. So Dellums took me over and introduced us. And so I was prepared. So I gave him a button, member as an honorary member of the Earth Regeneration Society, climate, soil, forest, and energy, and clay and stock climate stabilization. I gave him a copy of our book, a 100-page book laying all this out, which came out in 1992. And shook his hand as an honorary member of the ERS. Now, his book came out later, but when it came to climate, not a bit of help. He's not upsetting the oil industry. He says a little about warming. And this sort of goes by that subject so as not to get in trouble with the oil industry. Now, just this afternoon, somebody in another country told me, well, Gore owns about 500,000 shares of Occidental Petroleum. He is the controlling stockholder in Occidental Petroleum. And the speaker told me they were down in Costa Rica at the Peace University with a bunch of people hearing what was going on in Colombia, where some of their active people to protect the Iwa, the native peoples down in Colombia from these oil people going through. And there are activists, three of them had just been killed, and this was laid out in a bunch of meetings at the Peace University in Costa Rica. And here's old Gore head of that thing, or the strongest voice in it, if he wants to be. And this stuff going on down these levels. So now who do we look to, and how do we mobilize with Congress and with people in office and so on? Well, we have to do a lot of figuring on how. See, I'm for Kucinich, I know him, but he's down the way, he was going to maybe run with Barbara Lee, or if the Democrats won't put him up, would he run independently if there's enough support around the country? So we wait and see. But then if you look around at who's getting big votes now, what's this, General Clark or somebody?
Leslie Clark.
What, putting on a nice show? Well, I've heard some people say he has a terrible record in
the
past.
Scary. They?
So I don't know much about it.
It is a S. H. E. A shell game.
All right.
With all the various people, that are running as Democrats.
Yeah, the three or four big ones, though, there's all kinds of newspaper media put behind them in different ways to play them up, huh? Mm-hmm. Shell game.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good way to refer to it.
They, two, L, K, I, N, two kinds of people, of P, O, I, S, poison, two kinds of poison, one, will kill you. F, fast. E, faster. Two kinds of poison. One will kill you faster.
One fast
than the other
and one faster.
Yes. One fast and one faster. Yes. There, then, they. S, A, Then they say V O vote for the lesser of two evils. G, how about voting for someone who is on our side in O U in our C O community. How but we need someone to R run that is on our side in it, and that is from our community.
I believe that where I am and with people closest to me is to try and move a number of things along between now and the next election, such as getting the new energy things looked at and brought up in front. And Brian O'Leary and I both went to speak to the California Energy Commission on this when they met in July. And I've been close with them since they were first formed, because the California Energy Commission, the papers that established that was written up by a lawyer that was in the staff of Charles Warren, the assemblyman. Now, that man who wrote up those papers was later the head of the whole commission. And he's now the general attorney for a special group that's in charge of the finance of power things in California, and that's like $6 billion for new power plants. So that's my old buddy from way back, because he and I were together on the whole anti-nuclear effort. I was in the first citizen group here. When they developed the Energy Commission, they had to have a big citizen input. So I was in there to lay out the solar electric program for the state of California. And I kept pushing that into the minutes, into their meetings. And so the gist of all this is that we don't know. Oh, then David Freeman was in there, brought in to be the energy czar for Gray Davis. And he was head of the Los Angeles Water and Power for a while. Before that, to the Tennessee Valley Authority. So I know Freeman a little bit, but he's the boss for this attorney who's there, who's really the brains, and used to be part of a whole series of private attorneys that were advising Gray Davis. When it came to all those energy contracts that meant this ripoff of 9 billion or more of the people in California, when it came to signing those contracts, this bunch of lawyers, private lawyers with my friend in there, they told him, all of them said unanimously, do not sign those contracts. It's just going to be multiple ripoffs and fancy arrangements. Don't sign those. We got to change and hold out for something better for the people in California. And Gray Davis insisted on signing them to avoid blackouts, because that would look bad for his whole operation. Avoid the blackouts. Well, my friend can't speak because he was a hired lawyer, and therefore you can't talk about your relation with your the guy that hires you. So he could tell me things which he cannot say in public. He said what he knew, old Gray Davis would be gone, disappeared a long time ago. But he can't say anything, except he tells me and I can't say anything. Therefore, you don't know a thing tonight.
W, E, well, I can not T, A, talk, but I can
commit to writing.
S, I can say. I can say things. I can't talk, but I can say things.
Darn right.
Yeah.
Well, now I hope that people will. How can we arrange for people to somehow get in touch with me to get copies of Adam Trombley's 20 pages of the strongest statement of new energy development and what's behind it, how what it means, what it is, and how tragically we're moving through this web of environmental things heading for total oxygen gone if we don't totally revise all this.
C-O.
How do we get people to order this from me?
R-E. Corey could read it. And Corey and Alexi could video you reading it. We have a crew, Corey and Alexi. They could get together with you and videotape.
See, I would read this with real feeling, and
yes.
This is really my whole heart, my guts.
And then
into
we
this.
Could put it, we could play it both on Lover and on
I'll
the Berkeley
it. I'll
Cabin.
Send it to people.
Yes.
Well, for 20 pages, that's 60 cents down at the print shop plus mailing.
And we will archive it as well. So we'll put it on the cable TV. We will play it on Lover, and then we'll archive it so people can go anytime they want. And at the end of the reading, you can give whatever information you want for people if they want to get a copy of it.
Yeah, well, I covered a lot here, and, you know, just our sort of looking around and laughing at this horrible stuff we're dealing with.
Exactly.
That's what Howard Jeter and I, we get laughing about this stuff. It's so damn horrible, but we're going to deal with it. And that's what the Jeter plan is all about. I'll get a copy to you.
Thank you. That is
See,
how. That is how I sneak things in by just having conversation and having a fun conversation, sneak all this stuff in.
Well, did you hear this little story how we're going to help the folks in Iraq? It goes like this. It goes like this, see? They got this some sort of a government set up, you know, and they're supposed to do a constitution, and they got so many conflicts on all different levels. They're having trouble getting a constitution. Mm. So somebody in the U.S. says, we'll help them out. We'll give them ours because we're not using it.
Yes.
I don't know if you think that's funny.
True. Yeah. So we've gone way over, haven't
way
we?
Way over?
Oh, we haven't? Oh, we haven't gone
well,
way
I wanted
over.
To,
oh, good, good, good.
Well, I show you thinking, that I yes. brought along a statement by Brian O'Leary telling about how the New Energy Movement program, so it's a three-page statement that exists. And then also he wrote a powerful essay to these people back in the UN that he's going to meet with us next week.
P.
About the New Energy Movement.
P-U put it, put a G O O, put a good W, put a good word in to Brian, because we're trying to schedule him on this show. Put in a good word for us.
Well, now he's, we're trying to get a meeting together about the middle of November when the most of our board may be here in the area for a board meeting.
So he might be coming
so
to the Bay
be down
Area
in the
for
Bay
them.
Area for a while.
So we'll try to coordinate
See, that's like
with
the 14th or 19th or something of November.
Yes. Okay. Good. And can I have your W.I. wife on as a guest sometime?
Oh, I would like to see that. But she is She is would need special understanding and encouragement. She's a very sort of quiet, retiring person, but she's one of the most knowledgeable on the terrible conditions in the Oakland school system, because she's been a substitute teacher and run into the most terrible conditions where a lot of the kids just can't, they're just totally destructive in their lives and they can't learn and they're totally lost. There's so much of that, and there's so many bad principals and bad assistant principals and lack of security, lack of maintenance. This new guy brought in is supposed to help things has gotten worse every time that guy turns around, it seems, because she's run into that in personal experience and day-to-day teaching in different schools. Wow. Anyhow, she is a very, I describe her this way. She has a great breadth of history and psychology and things that she has great interest in and literature, but she also has all these levels of being somewhat psychic, of psychic sensing and of helping people psychologically and so on and so on. But she says she reads a great deal and watches a great deal of the news, and so and she raises things with me. Well, I'm just trying to write and organize and do all this stuff, see? She looks at me as kind of a lost cause over here. Because she has a wonderful grasp in thinking on a lot of things, see? So I say to her, you are of this dimension, you know, I appreciate all that, see?
Wow.
And then as for these things, I can they exist, and I can get copies to you of what Brian O'Leary has put out. And then the page. Did you ever hear of Julianne Malveaux? Now, there is somebody that was the first African-American woman to get a Ph.D. in economics at MIT. Mm. And she has she's on about 80 newspapers around the country and on television things. And she's an old friend from the Democratic Club movement. Because once upon a time, you know, there's a council of Democratic clubs, about 100 clubs in the state, and this is the spirit and the issue action of the Democratic Party in California. It has been since 1952. Well, I headed its energy caucus at one time, and then and its environment committee later. And she was head of the political committee. We were both there together. We've been friends, so we even put out the paper here in 1986 to the systems meeting back in Philadelphia, laying out the 20 million job program for the U.S. under full employment and a whole paper and analysis around it. It says, a plan for social action in reduction of atmospheric carbon dioxide and climate stabilization, Julianne Malveaux and Alden Bryan. So that was May 1986 back in Philadelphia. So anyway, this is the kind of thing that I'm waving in front of the camera here and saying, hello, folks. And I can give you copies for whatever good this can be put to.
Yes, we want copies. I may have B, J, Jim Burr read them onto tape.
Oh, he's got a nice clear voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
He reads, does our Lover News once a week.
Reads
the news stories.
Okay.
Yeah. So Frank may have him read that stuff, and we'll play it on Lover and archive it also.
Well, you know, the person that was with me in London for that meeting with those questionable characters in their right-wing political party, the person sitting on my left listening, she's over in Redwood Gardens, and she and I go down sometimes to have coffee when Jim Burr's there at the coffee shop, see? So we're all have a nice time together when we see each other, see? That's Vivian Ranieri, one of the best labor journalists in the country, and back here when the UN was first formed and so on. And she was Woman of the Year here in Berkeley a few years ago.
I want her on the show, too.
Well, now, she's the author of a very unusual book. The woman died in San Francisco some years back, who had been, and whose husband was Japanese and in Longshore Union, and she was the one for the labor group in San Francisco that when somebody got arrested and knocked around by the police, she would run down and get them out of jail. That was her main job. Mm. And therefore, the Hearst Press gave her a name. They called her the Red Angel. And they'd knock around some union guy and take him to jail, and they'd say, don't worry, the Red Angel will come get you out. That was what was going on for a number of years. But when she died, her husband insisted that Vivian Ranieri should write the book of their lives. She'd be the finest journalist and sympathetic and knew them well, see? Mm. And she did. Committee had her do it. So that was it dealt with their lives. And the Asian American Studies group in this country nominated that for a national award that year. Something else got it, but they nominated her book for it. So at least that's part of the background. She's got a pile like this of essential documents she wrote during her lifetime for the press. And so on and so on. Well, that's Vivian. But she had a fall and broke something in her hip here and was really out of commission. She can walk around a little bit now, but mostly with a cane or a walker. So she's recovering from, really can't do much.
E. Hey. We have a ramp. We have a ramp in the back.
Well, she's very knowledgeable. She used to be on the World Peace Committee, and she was in Japan once and was greatly honored for her role being there in the peace movement, the anti-nuclear movement in Japan. She was asked to be there as a speaker and things. Yeah.
So,
are you still doing the old machine there?
Yeah.
Well, we only got 25 subjects left to work on.
We will have you be. We will have you back to talk some more.
Oh. Well, I was looking forward. I called, remember the name, Alexander Borg Olivier, the ambassador of Malta, when we put through the, and he put through the Rio Summit and the Climate Treaty. So he was the co-sponsor with us and with another person in the UN in December of 88. Now, he's down at Kosovo. The head of the UN asked him to come down and write a constitution for Kosovo, which he did a couple of years ago. In fact, when I had my operation, he called me from down there to say, how are you? Because we were old buddies from way back, see? Well, now, I left a message for him yesterday down there in Kosovo. He's still there. I left a message saying, can we talk about him putting another resolution into the General Assembly, or seeing that went in, to set up this plan for crash targets on forests and energy, to stabilize climate and bring that CO2 level down. A crash program, either following the targets in our book or set their own targets, but all this has to be brought together for the whole group of countries. What they're doing, what's going on, because since we set our targets up based on international data, they've had all these fires and all kinds of things, and logging destroy so much of their forests, way beyond what we had data on. So they're going to have to come through with new figures to relate. And that's why we need a real working program through the UN to bring all these countries around, getting those targets met. What are they each doing about it? And really coordinate that. So I ran into somebody from the World Bank and said, hey, give me a grant for $250,000. I'll work 2 years on just this subject. Well, I didn't get anywhere with that. I mean, I don't own an oil company. Who am I?
So, I
just know a lot of folks where things may happen. Well, we got the damn treaty, you see. All right.
I am S-T. I am still W, waiting to S, C, L, cell, O, hour, sell out. You're still waiting to sell out. Frank said he'll sell out, but nobody's offered him enough money yet.
One of, well, now on that score, see, if you cause enough trouble, you get big money to shut up. Now, one of our board members.
I am waiting. I am R. I am T. Trying. You're trying to cause enough trouble to get someone to offer you a lot of money.
Okay, okay. Now, here's a little story, way off on the side, but one of our board members had a father that developed a new technology with a car, and it was so effective that they offered him $1 billion to just step out of it completely, and he refused. But that did shorten his life.
That shortened his life?
Yeah. And his son is on our board now, and he's a very able man.
Wow.
We're working together.
In? Oh? In other words? No, in O-T. O-R. O-R-G. A. Organ.
Organic.
F. Food. B. I. Big corporations. R. Buying out the small organic companies.
Oh, bad move, yeah.
Like M.
Monsanto.
O, Monsanto. M-O. Most people don't know. Most people think the B. A. Bad. The bad guys in that story. That scene is the, think it's the big companies. Most people think the bad guys in that scenario are the big companies that are buying out the small companies. But we've talked about the fact that it's the small companies that are willing to sell to the big companies. Like if the small companies had any integrity and said no. Mm. And then the big companies wouldn't be able to do it.
You notice global exchange is putting a lot of pressure on some companies. And some of them respond. Others talk but don't do anything. The others go on being terrible, like Monsanto.
Yes.
Now there's a woman back in a foundation back east. Trying to remember her name, but she is the head of this foundation, and she has talked over the years, talked to the CEOs of big corporations, and she's got the great majority of all this investment area saying, yes, we agree we're going to have to do something on environment and to shut up some of the corporations. You say all environmental stuff's bad, you know, they're stopped, according to her. Her movement to bring all this together with the CEOs was written up in a English Economics Journal with a whole page about it. Now that's one of the sections in our Jetter plan thing we published. So you'll, when you get a copy of that, you can you'll have it. Eileen Clausen, that's her name. Eileen Clausen in the Pew Foundation, P-E-W. She's lined up all these CEOs a number of 3-4 years ago. They say, yes, we agree. We're the 3/4 of all the investment of corporations. We got to really do things on environment. Well, all right. So what?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see what we have to hit on with the whole new energy movement is, let's say the best 10 or 20 technologies and the individuals developing them. They find that corporations with big investment money will just sit and not give them anything till all of a sudden it's in big production. Mm-hmm. They'll make fast profits the first year. You can't make fast profits in 1 year. You got to help develop it and go through phases for a number of years, maybe. See, therefore, they're not getting any new capital help, and that's where we got to bring in something from government levels. But that's this corporate thing, see? I don't know what Eileen Clausen can do to help break through it. I tried to get her on the phone one day, but it was too difficult. She's ahead of too much going on.
It's a wrap. So maybe you could give your name for everyone.
Oh yeah, here we go. Like the beginning of the program. My name is Alden Bryant. That's AlDenBryant. And my phone number is 510 here in Berkeley, of course. I've been here since 1942. And that number is 527-9716. Call me up and leave a message and we'll get stuff to you. Mm-hmm. Or we'll see what you're doing.
That's great. Mm. Yeah. Okay. And this is Lover. And your player's going to stop. Just hit play again.